Council is here. We'll call the second case, case number A241615, in the matter of the application of Marco Quinton Hanlon for a change of name. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. We will only be having oral argument from the appellant today, so you will have 15 minutes. Feel free to adjust the podium. Please identify yourself and the party you represent before you begin. You can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Alex Wilkie, and I am here as pro bono counsel on behalf of the appellant, Marco Quinton Hanlon. This is a case about whether every person who must register as a predatory offender is automatically denied a right to a name change, even if for therapeutic, legitimate, or health purposes, such as to align with their gender identity, despite the fact that Minnesota law lays out a procedure for allowing such a name change. Under Minnesota's felony name change statute, a person with a felony conviction seeking a name change must provide notice to the prosecuting authority that obtained the conviction against them. Upon receiving notice, the prosecuting authority may object only under four bases, one of which is that the request, if granted, would compromise public safety. In addition, the statute provides that the court shall grant the name change if a failure to do so would infringe upon the requesting party's constitutional right. Here, the St. Louis County Attorney objected on the vague and nonspecific premise that appellant's name change would compromise public safety, because appellant will be required to register as a predatory offender under Minnesota's Community and Notification Act upon release. The district court agreed with the county attorney and denied appellant's name change and erred in two primary ways. First, despite the fact that appellant's registration requirement actually makes the public safer because her information will be more diligently recorded and published as opposed to other offenders, and the state presented no evidence beyond her conviction that she is a threat to public safety, and it is a matter of public record that appellant's new name and her former names will be included in the registry.
Well, but my question about that, I mean, I don't disagree with what you've said, but the statute, the registry statute, 243.166 specifically says that registration information is private data. So the fact that they've registered, and the registration is designed so that law enforcement have this information, not the general public. So, you know, it seems like you're asking us to, or asking the district court to take this leap that because they register, the public will have information, because that's not necessarily true, is it?
Yes, Your Honor, if I could answer your question. So with respect to what you were asking, the notification statute also provides that an offender will be provided a risk level, and that risk level, where I believe it's 1 through 3, those risk levels will determine what information is posted publicly.
If only if they are designated level 3, is there any requirement that the BCA put this information on the website? And I mean, we're years away from a risk level assignment in this case, aren't we?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I may, with respect to what you're stating about the information only being posted with the risk level, the district court noted that the Minnesota legislature, the purpose of the statute is to promote public safety. Now, the district court essentially substituted its opinion or its judgment as to what effectuates that purpose. So if the Minnesota legislature decides that someone who is assigned a lower level risk 1 or 2 does not need to publish that information publicly, that is for the Minnesota legislature to decide to effectuate that public safety purpose, Your Honor.
Well, I thought it was the agency, the BCA, that decides what level of disclosure, the scope of the disclosure, under 244.052.
Yes, Your Honor, for purposes of enforcement. So for purposes of effectuating, I suppose, the legislature as well as the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension both effectuate that purpose. The Bureau through enforcement and the Minnesota legislature through the statute itself.
Maybe the bottom line, I guess, for me is why should we find abuse of discretion by the district court when there so much is unknown about the extent to which your client's felony conviction will be made available to the public while that is unknown? I mean, how can we fault the district court for concluding that public safety is implicated by granting the name change?
Yes, Your Honor. One of the reasons why we can say that this is abuse of discretion here is particularly because in at least one way, the district court did not even take into account the evidence that the appellant presented that she is not a public safety risk. In fact, appellant presented evidence that she has taken substantial steps to rehabilitate herself through mental health care and through substance abuse treatment, and has even created a program while incarcerated to address other individuals' issues with, especially surrounding sexual abuse, to which the appellant has experienced herself.
Was there specific evidence put before the district court that if your client was assigned a level 3 and if a name change was granted, for instance, if a member of the public put into the community notification database your client's current name, would the new name pop up as an also known as name? Was that evidence put before the district court?
Yes, Your Honor. So upon the during the oral argument before the district court, appellant made that argument and in fact pointed to the registry itself. That is a matter of public record that the court should be able to take judicial notice of, that if an individual that is on the registry as a level 3 offender is looked up. So for example, if that individual's name is John Smith, if that individual has been married or changed their name, or if that individual goes by another name, those names will also be present on that public registry.
Now, I don't think that the record on appeal includes a transcript of that hearing. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So any arguments that were made at that hearing are not part of the record on appeal that we can consider?
I suppose I can answer that question. So specifically, those arguments are a matter of public record that your honors can all actually access yourselves. So therefore, it is something that your honors can take judicial notice of. And it essentially was raised not in the exact way, but it was raised because appellant raised the alias requirement. And in fact, appellant was not even notified that the alias requirement would necessarily be an issue because the county attorney did not raise the alias requirement issue. The district court did.
So Ms. Wilkie, it seemed to me that the, again, building off of Judge Bond's question, the record of trial, I mean, there wasn't, you're talking about the judge having to take judicial notice, but there really were not facts or evidence developed that would permit the judge to have concluded based on what was introduced that the appellant would have had to supply all aliases in order to complete this registration, correct? I mean, that piece is missing.
Well, Your Honor, in the briefing, appellant did raise the alias issue.
I'm not talking about the briefing. I'm talking about in district court. You're talking about briefing the district court?
Yes.
Okay, so then how was that developed, you know, at the hearing?
Well, it was developed at the hearing just without the transcript, Your Honor.
I don't understand that response. It was developed without the transcript?
Well, the issue was presented to the district court, but the elaboration of the argument is not presented to this court through the transcript. Is that your question, Your Honor?
I guess my question is, wouldn't this require some factual findings from the district court, which we don't have here because it didn't have any evidence before it on this issue?
Well, no, Your Honor, if I may, Your Honor, the district court did acknowledge it as a factual finding because the district court stated that the requirement of the name and any aliases to be included is not reflected in the relevant Minnesota statute. Mm-hmm. And then the district court stated, based on the absence of the requirement of the Minnesota statute, acknowledging that if it were in the Minnesota statute, then the court would have felt comfortable holding that the alias requirement would have been sufficient for this purpose, Your Honor.
Right, and I understood that, but and I'm not articulating this clearly, obviously, but I thought you were, at the hearing it was argued by appellant that it was undisputed that she would have to provide all aliases to register correctly. And the judge responded that it's not apparent from the language of the statute. And then it didn't seem like there was further development of that argument on appellant's part.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Question?
So I think I'm understanding your question. I apologize, Your Honor.
That's the way I'm phrasing it.
it's no, I do understand your question. So this issue of the aliases, as I stated, was initially raised during briefing, and however, it was not an issue that appellant fleshed out during briefing, or necessarily that it was a fact that was accepted by the court via the briefing, because for the first time that it was raised was by the district court itself. And then in that same breath, the district court did not dispute that is not the case, especially because it is a matter of public record on the registry website, as well as a matter of public record through Minnesota's substantial compliance with SORNA, which is the federal law that appellant did notify the district court of.
Well, I'm looking at your briefing in the district court, and it's pretty cursory on this issue. It doesn't even cite the statute. It says, Ms. Hanlon will be required to register with the predatory offender registry upon release. This means she will be required to not only register her new name, but she must also provide any other aliases, a photo, her address, and the offense for which she was convicted. That then drops a footnote to the Federal Sex Offender Registration and Notification Program, which does require that. But do you agree Minnesota's statute does not include names and aliases?
Yes, Your Honor. And if I...
And what's an alias? I mean, is my maiden name an alias? I thought an alias was like a fictitious name.
Well, if we would look at the dictionary definition, I suppose there might be a distinction. However, on the Minnesota registry, there's not only changes of last names, but changes of the entire name at all that have nothing to do with the previous name.
And then again, just so I understand, and following up on Judge Halbrook's question, you did not offer evidence, either, you know, a copy of the registration form or, you know, the things that you cite now in your brief as being undisputed factual matters. You didn't provide the district court with copies of the form or the website information, correct?
No, Your Honor. And the reason why that was not provided is because the county attorney's only objection to Ms. Hanlon's name change was that because she is required to register, that inherently makes her a public safety risk. There was no mention of aliases. So that was actually a proffered argument from the appellant, and it was not something that was even raised by the county attorney at all. So that's why it wasn't sufficiently addressed, I suppose, in the briefing.
Can I ask a question, switching now to your equal protection argument? You characterize this as an as-applied equal protection, and I don't understand that. I mean, I understand that the felony name change statute says the court shall grant a name change if failure to allow it would infringe on a constitutional right of the person. Is that where your equal protection argument flows from? Or help me understand your equal protection argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Sort of. But the equal protection argument flows from the fact that the district court categorically denied appellant a right to a name change based on her registration status rather than taking into account the evidence that actually would make her a public safety risk. So as applied to her, based on the fact that she is similarly situated to women, by doing so, that violated her right to equal protection to align with her gender identity.
So, but I mean, you, since the whole focus then is this felony name change statute, would you agree that the relevant comparison group, if you will, for the threshold inquiry would be women who have felony convictions?
No, Your Honor. And the reason why appellant takes the position that she is not similarly situated to women with felony convictions in this purpose is because under the statute, women who have felonies are not barred from seeking a name change. In fact, if the
prosecutor— And neither is she. This was just, wasn't this just the district court exercising the discretion it gets to exercise under the felony name change statute?
No, Your Honor, because the district court abused its discretion when it ordered this name change to be denied, because the district court did not even take into account the substantial evidence, or did not even note or address at all the substantial evidence that appellant presented to show that she is not a public safety risk. And in fact, the case law in the case law surrounding this issue, where the courts have found that there is a public safety risk, have involved individuals that have committed multiple felonies or habitual offenders. For example, in the case that district court cites in Wagner, in that case, that that individual had been committing felonies, violent felonies, for over 20 years.
I wonder if the district court would have benefited from evidence or testimony, maybe particularly from the Department of Corrections or of an expert nature, that connected some of the steps that your client has taken in prison with a decrease in public safety risk. I mean, I didn't see that that kind of evidence was presented either to the district court.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that that would have been evidence that would have been beneficial for the appellant to present.
I don't, do, are if there you do any not. Further questions?
No.
I will just note for the marshal, the clock may be going back up. No? Is there one more statement you are wrapped up?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors, for being courteous of my first oral argument. I would just like to say to finish out that the information before the court, there was no opposing party. So therefore there was nothing else for the appellant to necessarily dispute. And therefore the information before the district court had to be taken as true, because there was no opposition. And in fact, the Community Notification Act will establish the level of the offender and will establish what is considered safe for the community. And therefore, if Ms. Hanlon is given a safety risk level of 1, then that means that the Bureau has decided that she is not a public safety concern, and therefore the alias requirement or the registration requirement would not be relevant at all. Very Thank good. You, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel, for your argument. This case has been submitted. We will issue an opinion in the time prescribed by statute.